Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on dead men's secrets when we come back. You know, 3,000 years ago, before the science of meteorology was even thought of, King Solomon wrote in Ecclesiastes 1 verse 7 that all of the rivers run into the sea, and yet the sea is not full. Unto the place from whence the rivers come, thither they return again. Well, every year the continents and islands of this earth pour down into the oceans a stupendous volume of water. About 286,000 cubic miles of water pour into the oceans every year. Now, for century after century, and millennium after millennium, this has been going on. And the sea has not increased its level by so much as an inch. Now, how is that possible? Well, we call it the circle or cycle of evaporation and precipitation. The writer of Ecclesiastes said that the ocean maintains its level in spite of this gigantic annual influx, because the rivers go back to the place from whence they came. And indeed they do. Every drop of rain that falls climbs back upon the Creator's elevator of evaporation to form themselves into clouds, and then ride back to the head of their toboggan slide to begin their journey all over again. Now, in the modern science of meteorology, we understand this. Its laws are comprehended. Well, modern science has learned what the writer of Ecclesiastes knew 3,000 years ago. Now, that's just one more of the many examples of science in Scripture. And it's one of the many lessons in our Mosaic Law School, conducted twice a year here at the Law School in Isabella, Missouri. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's the place to start. It's educational, it's informative, and it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call an order for yours, or put in an order for yours right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click on the email machine, send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it. Dead men's secrets, or dead men tell tales. You've probably watched PBS a time or two and seen a special or a, you know, some kind of a TV documentary, you know, that details, in some regard, some ancient relics, some ancient buildings, you know, like the Great Pyramid of Egypt. And then they'll give you the numbers that go along with it, you know, like this is the most massive building ever built in the history of the world to this day, you know, as I speak to you today, as you're listening. The Great Pyramid of Cheops is the most massive building. Until about 1935, it was also the tallest building ever built in the world, until the Empire State Building was built back in 1935. The Great Pyramid was the biggest, tallest building in the world. And they'll tell you, you know, some statistics and one thing and another, and then we sit here in awe, and we kind of marvel, because you see, when we go to public school, they tell us that man years and years ago was a brute beast evolving from apes, and that we were really pretty dumb, dragging our knuckles on the ground and hitting our women over the head and dragging them off into the cave, you know. And so, you know, if your view of the world or your world view is based upon evolution, and then you look at this great pyramid out here, this great building, and you listen to these numbers over here, they don't add up. They don't add up. Now, I'm a general contractor, and I build buildings. And when we build a house, if that house is plus or minus an inch, that's plenty good enough. And when we get them a little out of square, you know, they're 2-3 inches out of square, no big deal. We just cover it up, you know, by dividing the inch and the 3 inches, you know, in half. And then when we put the roofing on, you know, we fudge a little bit over here at the bottom, and then we fudge a little bit up there at the opposite top. And you know, when you look at it, you can't see it. It's not that big a deal. And that's building a house. Now, the Great Pyramid, to show you how accurate it is, in 1964, they developed, I don't know who it was, but somebody developed what they call a laser transit. Now, we've had transits, you know, for hundreds of years. An eyepiece, a telescope, in which we could put a man out there in the field, you know, 100, 200, 300, 400 feet out there. We can measure elevations with a stick, you know, and we can measure straight lines and things like that. That's been going on for a long time. So we've been surveying and measuring, you know, for centuries. But the accuracy of it wasn't all that great. And so we've been making maps, you know, for hundreds of years. But the maps, you know, aren't exactly accurate. And so as time progresses along, we've been getting more accurate maps. And so, about 1964, somebody comes up with a new type of transit, and it's called a laser transit, and it's much more accurate, you know, than the old transits. And so, as time progresses along, technology improves, and we get more accurate readings. And so, somebody went over to the Great Pyramid and they measured it up, you know, see, well, how square is it? Now, the thing sits on 14 acres. It's not like building a house. I mean, an acre is 43,560 square feet. So if you can remember, that's about 40,000 square feet. If you've got a house that sits on 10,000 square foot lot, that's a quarter of an acre. You're on round numbers. 11,000 square feet would be a little closer. So if your lot's 11,000 square feet, now, that's a quarter of an acre, and then on that house you build a house, and if you can build that house within an inch or two of square, that's pretty good, and this is modern times. Well, the Great Pyramid sits on 14 acres. You know, let's just take 14 times 4. 14 times 4. That's 56 times bigger than your lot. 56 times bigger. And if your lot, you know, is an eighth of an acre over here, well, then it's about 112 times bigger. And the thing measures corner to corner on all four corners within 1/2 inch of absolute square. 1/2 inch on 14 acres. Now, like I said, I'm an old-timey general contractor, and I look at that and I say, my God, I couldn't build a house that close. I couldn't build a house on your lot to plus or minus 1/2 inch. Now, it could be done. I mean, if we wanted to spend the time, effort, energy, and the money, we could build a house plumb. I don't know that you could build it out of wood and make it plumb, but I think we probably, if we put our minds to it, we could probably do that out of some other material. Now, the reason I say that that's really a spectacular concept is because when I went to school, they told us that in ancient times, these people, they didn't have pulleys. You know, they didn't have caterpillar tractors. They didn't have the wheel. They didn't have transits. There was a company back in 1964 also that said that if they were going to build the Great Pyramid, that they could build the Great Pyramid, duplicate it the way it is, And they could mine the block from 2,500 miles away, ship it by rail and barge and boat, build the thing, and put the capstone on it. Now, that pyramid's sitting up there now without any capstone. Well, this company said that they could put it on there, and then they could do it for $32 billion. And that's a $32 billion. Now, that's in 1964 dollars. If you were going to multiply that out, you'd have to double it from 1980 to the present time, so that'd be $64 billion. And then you'd have to probably double that again from 1960 to 1980. I don't know what the inflation rate was in that 20 years. But I'd guess it was double again. So that'd be 64. And then we got to double again to 128. So talking about it in today's dollars would be about $128 billion. Well, that's a bunch of money. Now, people don't normally go out and just spend $128 billion, you know, just to be spending money or just to be building something. I mean, when you build a building, you know, like the Trade Towers or the Empire State Building or something like that, there's got to be a return. There's got to be a reason. There's got to be a purpose behind it. And that's a big building. By the way, the building is built with expansion joints. For those of you that might not know what that is, when the sun shines on the Golden Gate Bridge, it's built out of steel, and it expands. And you've got to have expansion joints. So when you're driving on the deck of the bridge, you'll cross over a grate. And that grate is interlocking like the fingers on your hands. And as the sun shines on the steel, it expands and contracts an inch or two or three or five. I don't know how much it expands, but it's got an expansion joint in there. Well, the Great Pyramid, when the sun shines on one side of it, it will expand faster, expand more than on the side where the sun isn't shining. So you've got to have a modality for the entire building to expand, or at least that outer shell to expand and contract. And they've got grooves. The builders of the Great Pyramids understood expansion and contraction. And so they build it into the Great Pyramid. Now, thing's been there for several thousand years, and it hasn't cracked and broken and fallen down. That's amazing. The Empire State Building hasn't been there for several thousand years. Neither has the Golden Gate Bridge or the Bay Bridge. And, of course, the Twin Towers, they didn't last very long. Now, it would say to me that the people who built the Great Pyramid must have had at least the same technology that we had in 1964 to measure it. You know, just my common sense says to me, if we couldn't measure the damn thing until 1964 because we didn't have a laser transit, then the people that built it had to have at least had the technology of a laser transit to build it. Because up until 1964, boys and girls, we couldn't duplicate it without the laser transit. So whether the guys who built the thing, and I was told this one time, I said, well, how did they level it up? Now, the thing sits plumb. It's level. And now they got satellites out there in space with lasers, and they can shoot and they can measure things now pretty darn accurately, you know, and they kind of marvel. I do. I'm an old-timey general contractor, and I got to tell you, I don't think I could build an outhouse that close. I got two outhouses out here, and they're not plus or minus a half an inch. First of all, nobody would spend the time trying to make it that close. It isn't necessary. But then when this thing sits on 14 acres and it's plus or minus plumb, and then it's plus or minus a half inch on four corners, sitting on 14 acres, which is bigger than the Empire State Building, which is bigger than the Twin Towers, which is more accurate than either. You know, you got to sit there and say, hey, wait a minute. These guys were not savages dragging their knuckles on the back of the ground. These were not Cro-Magnons. We can't duplicate the thing today. That tells me they got to be smarter than we are. Now, if we could duplicate the thing today, we'd have four or five of them sitting out there. And you don't see anybody building those today. Now, there had to be a reason for it. I don't know what the reason was. And that's another thing. People don't spend $32, $64, or $128 billion, you know, building the most massive building that's ever been constructed in the history of mankind without a purpose. We haven't got a clue. Can't figure it out. Nobody's spending $128 billion today to build something over there in Washington, D.C. to commemorate World War II. We don't have the money, number one. Number two, if we had the money, we couldn't duplicate it. Don't know how. We don't know how they did it. Well, the guy that wrote the book, Dead Men's Secrets, his name is Jonathan Gray. He hits upon this very subject matter over here. In fact, it isn't just the Great Pyramid. He hits upon a number of areas of life, like geography, astronomy, cosmology, mathematics, metallurgy, large-scale construction, construction techniques, social organization, engineering, mechanical devices, everyday items, clothing, art, medicine, flight, space travel, ancient science and civilization. Can you imagine space travel before Christ? Ancient science before Christ, civilization before Christ, flight, medicine, art, and clothing before Christ, equal to or superior to anything that we have today. Now, right away, somebody says, well, if that were true, we would have heard about it from archaeology. You would? You would? Excuse me. In 1940, there was a skeleton up here in the museum in Chicago. I think they call it the Museum of Natural History. It was a 14-foot skeleton. Now, the Bible says there were giants on earth in those days. This is back in Genesis chapter 5, I believe it is, or 6. There were giants on earth in those days. That does not fit with the theory of evolution. It doesn't fit with modern science. Now, go into that museum today, and you're not going to find that 14-foot skeleton that was there in 1940. I don't know what happened to it. I'm just telling you that in 1940 it was there. Today it's gone. It doesn't fit with the theory of evolution. And I first of all want to tell you that that is not science, and that is not academic. That is propaganda. If it doesn't fit with your theory, what you do is you destroy it. You eliminate it. Get rid of it. And that's not honest. And it's not intellectual. So when I hear stories like that, I say to myself, well, why would archaeology, why would science, why would people in museums want to deliberately destroy the evidence? I mean, if there were giants, then why don't we say, well, gosh, there were giants. That's the truth. How many of these giants were there? Well, now, it could be that the 14-foot giant was just an anomaly. You know, it happens once in a while. You look in the Guinness Book of Records, there was a guy that was just, I think it was 8 foot 11, or 8 foot 10 and a half or something. Just a shade under 9 feet tall. And the Bible talks about a guy named Goliath. You know, there's David and Goliath. There's a Bible story there. Well, Goliath was 9'6". And compared to the giants described in the Bible, Goliath was a midget. You know, 9 feet is pretty tall when you're comparing it to a 6-foot man, but 14 feet. And there was a story of a guy named King Og, and his bedstead was 14 feet. So the 14-foot skeleton that was in the Chicago Museum was an average run-of-the-mill 14-foot skeleton. There were people that were 15, 16 feet tall. And I suppose there were people that were 9, 10, 11, 12 feet tall. But they're all big. They're big guys. Now, are there any other skeletons beside that one in the Museum of Natural History in Chicago? And the answer is yes, by the hundreds. They've been discovered all over the world. And Dead Men's Secrets identifies the locations of those finds. And I didn't know that before. So I had heard of the Great Pyramid. I had heard of the Nazca monuments out here in the desert where they get spiders and monkeys, you know, that are miles across, 6-8 miles across. And big buildings with building blocks that weigh 50 tons down in Peru and Ecuador. And cities that are built on cliffs and on top of mountains, you know. And those are just, you know, one here and one there and one. It makes you think, well, my God, were there people out here in ancient times smarter than we are today, more technologically advanced? Did they have ships that could go across the oceans? Yeah, and all of that. And space travel, too. Before the flood, people were traveling into space, flying in jet airplanes. They had medicine equal to today, art, clothing, and mechanical devices that have been dug up, but they don't fit the theory of evolution. See, evolution is a fairy tale for adults that tells us once upon a time, long, long ago and far, far away. And then they proceed to tell us the story about how billions and billions of years ago, thus and such occurred. Pure fantasy. There isn't a shred of evidence, not a shred of proof. No scientific tests can be duplicated. And, you know, if people want to believe that, that's fine. There's no problem with that. People believe in religion. I kind of watch people, you know, religious people. They scare the hell out of me, and I watch them as far away as I can get from them. And then they believe in superstition. And rational people who attach themselves to science, they attach themselves to another superstition called evolution. And they call that science. I look at both of them and I say, oh my God, I got one superstitious bunch on the one hand, and I look over here and I got another superstitious bunch on the other hand. And neither side can ever come to an actual grasp of truth, an understanding. You know, how did it actually happen? So in order for us to do that, if we're going to arrive at the truth, we got to actually come to grips with 14-foot skeletons and buildings that are so big and so massive that we can't duplicate them today, and ask the question, well, how do those people build that? Who was here to do that? We look at Stonehenge, you know, in amazement to this day and say, how in the world did those people get 30-ton blocks of rock sitting up there on top of that? That would be a whale of a feat. It can be duplicated. We could do Stonehenge. But hey, boys and girls, there's a lot of buildings around the world that we can't duplicate today. There's a block of rock in a wall down in Ecuador that weighs 200,000 tons. It's a dressed rock. It's a square. You know, I say square, it's rectangular, but it's, you know, it's got corners to it. It's got 8 corners. And these corners, you know, are exact. It didn't just evolve this way. You know, if you're out here walking around, you know, and you see a block of rock over here and this thing is square, and you measure it up and it's got the same measurements all around it, you know, you can be pretty sure that some intelligence over here squared that thing up. Here's the crazy part of it. Do you know how much 200,000 tons is? That's a lot of weight. That's a big chunk. Let me describe it. The Titanic, you know, that big ship, the Titanic, and the Queen Mary, you know, these big merchant ships. Well, those big luxury liners weigh about 40,000 tons. 40,000 tons. All right, now let's pull the Queen Mary into a shipyard, and let's just stick it under a couple of cranes, and let's just pick it up and set it on the ground. Do you think that there's any place in the world that there's a crane big enough to pick up a ship like the Queen Mary? Well, I'm here to tell you that there isn't. So when they want to work on a ship that big, what they have to do is run it into what they call a dry dock. And that's a big hole in the ground that they can flood with water. They can float the thing in, and then they let the water out of it, and the thing settles down on the bottom, and then they can go in there and then go to work on it. So when we want to work on a ship, we have to put it in a dry dock. You can't pick it up. Now, there are places that have cranes that pick up fishing boats and just pick them up out of the water and stick them over here on the ground. And then they work on them, and then they pick them up off the ground, and they set them back in the water. Fishing boats and things like that. Now, let's go down here. I told you there's a rock here that's now 200,000 tons. There's lots of rocks that are 50,000 tons. That's as big as or bigger than the Queen Mary. There's lots of rocks that weigh 200 tons. You know, they go anywhere from 3, 6, 16, 30, 50 tons, things like that. And these rocks are set into walls, and they're dressed. Now, some of them are square. Some of them are odd shapes, and then the odd shape fits with the next rock, and it's cut in an odd shape to fit. Kind of like looking at a puzzle. You know the odd shapes that go into a jigsaw puzzle? And remember that the tab has to fit into a corresponding hole. And then when you're doing a jigsaw puzzle, you know, if you'll think about it, yeah, it's true, you got a tab and you got a hole, but they don't fit together perfectly. So if they don't fit together perfectly, well, then obviously it doesn't go there. All right, well, these rocks are built like a jigsaw puzzle. They're so close together, you can't stick a knife blade between them. So they were cut. There isn't any technology today that can cut rock irregularly and then put them together. None. Doesn't exist. And yet there they are. Now those people that did that were smarter than we are today. They had a greater technology than we have today. And the Bible talks about that. And the Bible talks about space flight. The Bible talks about flight. And yet, your preacher doesn't talk about that because if he did, he wouldn't last long as your preacher. Because he subscribes to evolutionary philosophy and he doesn't tell you everything that's in the Bible. And unless you read it for yourself, you wouldn't know that. And most religious people don't read the Bible. They haven't got a clue. So atheists and agnostics and evolutionists, they don't read the Bible because they don't want to. The religious guys, they don't read the Bible because I'm not sure that they're capable. I mean, everybody's got one, but they don't read it. And if they read it, they don't believe what it says. I mean, time and time and time again, you know, you take a look at people's actions, you know, in life. People don't practice Exodus chapter 12. Jesus asked the question. He said, well, why do you people call me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? That's because they've got a different God. They've got a different religion. They've got a different program over here that they follow. They don't follow the scripture. Well, anyway, Jonathan Gray over here writes a book called Dead Men's Secrets. And I want to tell you a little story here, pertinently. William Prescott, the great archaeologist, reminds us that a nation may pass away and leave only the memory of its existence, but the stories of science that it has gathered up will endure forever. You see, folklore is a fossil of history. It preserves history in the guise of colorful tales. Far from being a collection of fables, it is a recital of actual past events, even though from generation to generation some facts have become distorted or forgotten. Professor I.A. Efremov of the Soviet Union cautions that historians must pay more respect to ancient traditions and folklore. And he accuses Western science of snobbishness in rejecting the tales of the common people. We must face it. Legends are usually based on hardcore fact. Take the legend of Troy, for instance. No scholar ever took the Iliad or the Odyssey of Homer as history. But Schliemann, putting faith in it, discovered the mythical city of Troy. The Iliad spoke of a cup decorated with doves, which Odysseus used. In a shaft, Schliemann found the 3,600-year-old cup. Herodias told a fabulous story of a distant country where griffins guarded a golden treasure. This land, Altai or Kimshan, has now been found, together with ancient gold mines and decorations from a high culture, prominently display the griffin. This vague myth is now seen to be a fact. Mexican Indian legends spoke of a sacred well of sacrifice into which maidens and jewelry were hurled. Historians dismiss this as a mere tale, until the well at Chichen Itza was discovered in the 19th century. Now, more than any document, the Bible has been assailed as a collection of fanciful myths. And yet, to the embarrassment of its critics, archaeological discoveries have proved time and time again that the fabled cities, mythical persons, and impossible events were not only true, but they were in fact reliable historical reporting in every detail. And indeed, the Bible can now be regarded as the most accurate and the most trustworthy source of history that we possess. I'll pause here for a moment and give you a little time to cogitate on that and say, oh, no, not the Bible. Well, okay, while we take this break, you come up with another historical source 3,000 years old that's more accurate than the Bible, or that's just as accurate as the Bible. And then when you can't do that, come up with one that's half as accurate as the Bible, or 10% with the accuracy of the Bible. And then send me an email, let me know what it is, would you? And I'll review it here on the program. All right, let me give you your mid-course reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. We're open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Now, The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. Remember, The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling The Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate and recommend or endorse The Law Hour or editorial review. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on The Law Hour may be hostile, secular, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by The Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. Now, for more information about The Law Hour and editorial review, remember our webpage is georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing a book called Dead Men Tell Tales. Actually, it's Dead Men's Secrets by Jonathan Gray. You can probably get a copy from Barnes & Noble. It's 2004. It's fairly new, This one's a paperback, published by Teach Services Incorporated. T-E-A-C-H, Services Incorporated. They got a webpage. It's www.teachservices.com. Spelled T-E-A-C-H-S-E-R-V-I-C-E-S.com, just the way it sounds. It's www.teachservices.com. Now, the T-E-A-C-H-S is in capitals, and E-R-V-I-C-E-S is lowercase, .com is lowercase. I don't know if that's important or not, but there it is, teachservices.com. And remember, if you can't get it there, our old friends down at BraveNewBookstore.com will get it for you in Austin, Texas. That's BraveNewBookstore.com if you can't get it anywhere else. We can always get it there. Underground books, books that the establishment doesn't want you to see, doesn't want you to hear, doesn't want you to know about. Sometimes they have to be searched out. All right, so these legends are usually based upon hardcore fact. Now, our ancestral memory of the golden era. You know, if we were to credit the collective testimony of all ancient races, man's early history was truly an incredible history. It was a golden age of advanced civilization, of original giants who had superior intelligence and technology. This appears to have been a universal truth known to everyone in ancient times. Sacred records affirm that at the very beginning, soon after the fall from paradise, men possessed extraordinary mental abilities. Beginning with the raw earth, they mastered a high level of civilization and technology in just the first six generations of their existence. In that short time, they were able to build cities, play complex musical instruments, and smelt metals. Indeed, with their scientific complexities, these earliest men, it seems, were no fools. We might well wonder to what degree they further developed and refined this technology. In the final few centuries before the flood struck, were the miracles of science as common as they are now? A perfectly valid question, I would think. Now imagine, if you can, paved rainbow cities whose houses of crystal reflected every special hue, and we're talking about air travel, computers, and plastics. Now, did you know that when Alexander Graham Bell gave us the telephone, he said that it had been done before? The old devices have been reinvented, he observed. Yes, you read it right. That's exactly what Bell said. He said, in fact, the question was pressed further by the eminent British scientist Frederick Soddy. He's a winner of the Nobel Prize in Physics, and he wondered whether the ancients might not only have attained our present knowledge, but a power hitherto unmastered by us at this time. Now, there are physical remains also. So, in our quest here for the truth concerning ancient civilizations, we've got to have some physical evidence. You know, as a jurist or a lawyer, if we went into court and we wanted to prove our theory or prove our side of the case, we'd have to have some kind of evidence. We call them exhibits, physical evidence. Now, where did Bell and Soddy get their information? Well, quite possibly from some rusty old records. Nevertheless, our quest is not based on ancient text and reports, but on accepted scientific discoveries. There are recently discovered artifacts that cannot be dismissed, namely objects of metal sitting in museums today that are unquestionably made in the ancient world, that would have required very advanced technology to produce, a technology not to be repeated until our day today. The weight of evidence grows daily, evidence that all of the major secrets of modern technology were known and then forgotten long ago, evidence that early man did create a society that surpassed ours in all aspects of development. The entire world is really a dead man's tomb. It's a treasure hunter's paradise. As we prize or we open the coffin, suspense builds. And slowly, we are lifting the lid on a lost technology which almost smacks of science fiction. We come face to face with such absurdities as brain transplants, colonies on Mars, and invisible men. And then we wonder, what's next? Well, admittedly, such concepts almost strain credibility. And we're tempted to ask, could the ancients have really advanced so far? It may help to consider our own age. As recently as 100 years ago, were not most of today's inventions totally unknown? Even unbelievable. Since then, the spawning has been very sudden and very rapid. And what's more, the present age of basic discoveries is hardly at its end. It is forecast that just 15 years in the future, the accumulated knowledge that we have today will double in just 15 years. Now, can you grasp what that means? How then can one possibly conceive of the state of knowledge attained by the antediluvians before the deluge struck? Let me ask you this question. Think about this for a second. In the Bible, it tells us that they were artificers in brass and iron in Genesis chapter 4. An artificer in brass and iron. Let's go back to Columbus. Now, we look back 500 years and we say, well, that's the Middle Ages, and technology wasn't as advanced as it is today, but we had ships. And we had metallurgy, we had swords, you know, and they had some cannons, they had guns, they knew about gunpowder. Well, in Columbus's day, in 1500, they were still casting cannon in sand. A turret lathe had not been invented yet. Metalworking tools, such as lathes, were yet to be discovered in the future. Now, if we were casting cannon in sand 500 years ago, and within 500 years, we're putting men on the moon, if in Genesis 4 they already had advanced metallurgy, that is, the mixing of metals together, which is advanced beyond casting cannon in sand, couldn't they do the same thing in 500 years? Now, the amount of time from Adam and Eve until the flood was 1,656 years. So if in the first 1,100 years, they were able to reach metallurgy, then they had 556 years left with which to duplicate the technology that we have today. Now, there's an obscure scripture here in the Bible, I thought I'd point this one out, it's in Deuteronomy chapter 30, that anticipates space travel. I looked at this some years back, and I kind of marveled, and I said, why would God even put such a thing in there, unless he was already familiar with? In verse 4, it says, if any of yours be driven out unto the outmost parts of heaven, from thence will the Lord your God gather you, and from thence shall he fetch you. How far out into the heavens has man traveled that he has been lost on other planets or on other moons, like, say, our moon or Mars? I don't know. It never entered our vocabulary until the last 50 years. It's been in my lifetime. You know, when I was a kid, we used to read the comics, and there was a guy by the name of Flash Gordon. That was science fiction. That was in the 1950s. Nobody ever thought that anybody was going to travel to the moon or build a space station or put satellites up in the air with which we could bounce radio waves off of and telephone calls never occurred to anybody. We had Dick Tracy with a watch, you know, a two-way communication watch. Today we all have cell phones. Dick Tracy, science fiction, 1950. He's got a two-way wrist radio. Today everybody's got a cell phone talking with people anywhere in the world. Now, we did that in the last 50 years or so. And notice that the technology that we have here today, in the world today, just take a look around you, computers, automobiles, airplanes, jet airplanes. We didn't have that 100 years ago. Go back 200 years. Look what has been accomplished over the past 200 years and ask yourself, if these people were already advanced in metallurgy, prior to, this is BC, this is way before the flood, for crying out loud, this is before Noah's Ark. Now I know, you know, you go to the movies and you look at the movie, you know, Noah's Ark, or you look at the movies that are produced by Cecil B. DeMille, you know, in Egyptian times, and we say, hey, these people are, you know, barbarians, they're ancient, they don't have technology. They're building pyramids that we can't duplicate today. They're building buildings and monuments that we don't have a technology to do. But they're dragging their knuckles on the ground and hitting their women over the head and dragging them off. You know, that's preposterous poppycock. It's insane. Doesn't add up with the physical evidence. I mean, that pyramid is sitting there, boys and girls, like it or lump it. It's there. We can't build one today. We don't have the money. There isn't anybody in the world, including the United States of America, has got the money to duplicate that Great Pyramid. Technologically, we could do it today, but it wasn't until 1964 that we were able to do it. Now, those people back in those days, they built that thing. And here's the Bible talking about space travel here in Deuteronomy 30, verse 4. And I'm sitting here saying, if we can come to space travel, if we can come to jet engine flight in 100 years, from 1900 to 2000, this isn't too much of a stretch of my imagination to see somebody doing this prior to the flood. And do we have any physical evidence of it? Oh, you betcha we do. Physical evidence abounds, not one or two or five or ten, but by the hundreds. By the hundreds. For instance, he's got some sections in here. I'm going to flip over here to, I guess, number 16. Let me get to chapter 16 here. And the one that, as a contractor, you know, the one that I was really surprised to see, there are 64 examples of construction techniques that have not been duplicated until the 20th century. That's not the buildings themselves. That's the techniques, like concrete. You know, we think of cement today, building the Empire State Building with steel and concrete, as being something new and modern that we just came up with in the last 100 years. You go back here 200 years, you didn't see any Empire State Buildings. Now, that's a modern technology. There's some buildings that have been built out here in the hinterlands, and there's microscopes. Did you know that in Moses' time they had microscopes? I was absolutely amazed. Glasswork and microscopes. I'm going to give you some examples. 24 examples of glasswork and microscopes sit in the museums today, not on display. They sit down in the basements, hidden away so that you can't see them. Like the skeleton of the 14-foot giant up in Chicago. They're not on display. They exist, they were found, they've been recorded, we have the pictures of it, we know that they're there, but they don't fit the theory of evolution, and anything that doesn't fit with evolution is not put on display. Nobody has an explanation for it. Well, there's an explanation. When you see something like a 200,000-ton block of rock that is set in position, somebody had the technology to make it, pick it up, move it, and set it into place. We can't do that today. And since we can't explain that, and our fairy tale dream world says that we're evolving better and better, smarter and smarter, it doesn't fit with the evolution fairy tale. So then we ignore it. We hide it. We pretend it doesn't exist. And as I said, that's not science, and it's not academic. It's just propaganda. So we're in chapter 16, and we've got some buildings. I want to point out a couple of three buildings here. I've got about 10 minutes. So, a startling surprise awaited Captain Don Henry on that particular day in 1976. He was 40 miles off the southern coast of Florida directing sonar readings on the ocean floor. Suddenly, an immense pyramid-shaped structure showed up. It was 300 feet below the surface. Subsequent underwater closed-circuit TV was to show the pyramid to be about 420 feet high. It's a veritable skyscraper, nearly the size of the Great Pyramids of Egypt. When 12 other pyramids turned up on a NASA satellite photograph of the Amazon jungle, noted author Charles Berlitz and Dr. Manson Valentine, curator of the Miami Science Museum, excitedly organized a major scientific expedition to the underwater pyramid, the first of its kind, which set out with a crack team of 15 archaeologists, researchers, and divers early in August of 1978. At the same time, a NASA-supported expedition led by Florida explorer Philip Miller set out for the Amazon jungles of Peru, accompanied by a documentary film team to investigate the foliage-covered pyramids found there. I'm intrigued by an apparent relationship here. Huge ruins throughout the world generally resemble each other in construction, as well as in geographical and astronomical alignment. What is more, constructions which are technologically impossible today face us. Precise construction and colossal size indicate that the builders had unknown techniques and energy sources at their disposal. It makes one feel that these magnificent time-defying ruins that still exist after 4,000 years can hardly be the work of primitive barbarians. Surely, they are the scientific instruments of an advanced universal civilization. So join me on a grand tour, and you'll see what I mean. Things that can't happen have happened here. The site is built 12,000 feet above sea level. This is very oxygen-poor air in which the slightest exertion can cause nausea and worse. And yet blocks of up to 200 tons were maneuvered over distances of up to 90 miles in rarefied air. This is not possible by muscular strength. This grand complex was built with a technical skill embarrassing to us and by a method which is totally unknown to us today. Here was a city of startling dimensions, acres and acres lie covered with truncated pyramids, artificial hills, lines of monoliths, platforms, underground rooms, and giant gates which incorporate architecture beyond our technical scope today. Many large gateways were built from a single stone. The Gate of the Sun is the biggest carved monolith in the world. It is a single block of rock, 10 feet high and 6 feet wide. The size of some of the buildings is astonishing. The Fortress of Acapana, 650 by 496 feet, was once a pyramid 167 feet high. The Sun Temple was on a platform 440 feet long by 390 feet wide, composed of blocks of rock 100 to 200 tons each. Walls of the temple complex itself had blocks of 60 tons each. Steps of the stone stairway were 50 tons apiece. Here were terraced temples like those of faraway Babylon and Nineveh. The walls of the palace were 220 feet long by 180 feet wide. Its throne room was 160 feet long by 130 feet wide. The steps from the palace entrance were washed by the lake now receding and 15 miles away. The paved court under our feet is 80 feet square with a covered gallery 45 feet on one side. Court and hall are one single block of dressed stone. One single block. Building blocks. One is 36 feet long, 7 feet wide, fitted without lime or mortar and without any joint showing. Nearly every stone is micro-accurately cut and polished, nicked, mortised, and occasionally even beveled. Water conduits have a completely modem shape with smooth cross-sections, polished inner and outer surfaces, and accurate edges. See these half-pipes? They have grooves and corresponding protrusions that fit together. Plundered Spanish invaders stole the interlocking copper or silver keys, which secured the stonework from earthquake damage until they had survived for thousands of years. Subsequent earthquakes leveled the structures. As late as the 19th century, there were imposing colonnades to admire, of which sadly there is now no trace. Many of the great buildings were dynamited, and then untold treasures disappeared. One 24-foot statue remains. But the records are there. You see, when the Spanish got there, they made records of it. And then they tore them down, blew them up, to salvage the gold, silver, and the metals, shipped them off to Spain. Here's the point. Here are buildings at 12,000 feet in Bolivia that we could not build today, let alone at 12,000 feet. And we're being told, you know, in our movies and in our books, that these great monuments were built by slave labor, and they were built by hand, without wheels, without pulleys, just by pure muscle. That's preposterous poppycock. You talk about fantasy world. Hey, you talk about fairy tales. That's a fairy tale. But it's better than that. That's just the beginning. There's more and more of these stories in here. In fact, just in this section alone, there are... let me just look back here and we'll take a look. I think there's about 67 of these, as I recall. Yeah, it's about 103 examples of these buildings that are all over the world, not just in Peru, but all over the world. Hey, I'm running out of time. I'm going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the webpage as well. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, our time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.